Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your I've Always Been Too On of Weekly Cultural Review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
Joe, the last 6 weeks in pop music, last 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Everybody trying to get out, trying to have a summer banger, some trying harder than others. Mm-hmm. Some not trying that hard and ending up with something anyway. I do feel like we're coming to the end of
the glut.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Man's has other things to do. But it does feel like Billie Eilish putting out this album that came out on Friday hit me hard and soft.
Yep.
That does feel like the it does feel like the end of a thing.
Okay. It's like the denouement.
It does feel that way a little bit. Does it strike you like that? Like, aren't you tired?
You know who's tired? Dua Lipa. Episode coming soon. We're gonna get to that Dua Lipa album eventually. This is the problem with the Dua Lipa album.
It's eminently bumpable.
Yes, stuff just keeps elbowing it out of the way.
The Dua Lipa album. The way I don't do a things to do list in like a classic way, which would say like I write out 10 things and then like cross them out.
Sure.
I have like a never ending document on my computer, and I'll just like delete things and then move things up and rearrange them. Like the Dua Lipa album is the one that keeps getting like,
yeah.
Like it's probably on like page 4 of the document right now. Anyway, respect and apologies.
Billy feels like not quite a grand finale. But no. Especially because I don't want to talk about this, like the rollout has been both understated and then really kicked up, like the day the album came out, basically. Mm-hmm. Like Billie is the kind of artist now on her third album, has such a huge and dedicated fan base, is obviously permanent A-list for as long as she wants to be. Mm-hmm. So she can release a 10-song album with no single and have it still feel like an event.
Okay. Has Billie Eilish only three albums? I know. Like when we were looking at the discography earlier, Billie Eilish quite literally just wins Grammys, probably for her Popcast Deluxe appearance, probably going to win a Grammy.
Yeah, Billie just opened her mouth.
Yeah.
Somebody hand her a Grammy right
does
now.
Does feel that way.
Yeah.
So it's striking and kind of strange to me that Billie Eilish doesn't have more albums than she does.
Right, because she basically has two album cycles for songs that won Oscars, the Barbie one and the James Bond one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And which are not on her albums.
Right.
And also like the prior stuff, like the early stuff, the SoundCloud stuff, like that's
right. She also has the EPs. Like,
there's a cycle before the first album.
The Ocean Eyes era.
Yes. Yeah. But this Billie Eilish album, I think my note, Billie Eilish, I've always referred to her as the Tony Bennett of our times. Yeah. I'm always saying Tony Bennett of our times. A singer who is a classicist masking as edgy. I think probably edgy in her actual life, but I mean more in sort of like the aesthetics.
Sure.
The aesthetics of the sound.
Some edgy choices to dress up quite traditional
structures.
Balladry.
And also like her voice. I think she has a really good voice. It's powerful. It's husky. It has color and range in it, but she doesn't use a lot of it.
Sure. She has a whisper and then she has a wail, but the wail is like twice an album.
And I feel like to me, of all contemporary pop stars, except Dua Lipa, Billie Eilish has made the most of like a rather limited palette. I happen to really like almost all the Billie Eilish songs, like all the Billie Eilish songs, but they do feel like very much within one band on the full spectrum. So I was very surprised by how this album sounds. This album does not sound like old Billie Eilish albums. First of all, before I tell you what it is, you want to say if you think it sounds like old Billie Eilish albums?
Well, it's once again her and her brother, Phineas.
Always.
Locked in for album number three. These kids love Radiohead. These kids really love Radiohead. I mean, they've always loved Radiohead, and there was touches of that, but felt it more here. I think there's some familiarity, and then there's some swerves. Like there's Billie Bossa Nova, you know, like they always love a little swing, a little backbeat. They return to a few of the same accents. But no, overall, I had more moments listening to this Billie Eilish album where I'm like, this sounds like something and I can't quite place it. All right, let's hear it. What do you got?
Well, okay, just some broad thoughts. Like, obviously, one of the things that Phineas has done so well on prior Billie Eilish albums. Also, people still mad about the eyelash thing?
You calling her Billie Eilish?
Like, people still upset about that.
Was anyone ever upset?
Yeah, I feel like people were upset. It's in good fun. It's lighthearted. We tease because we love. Phineas is extremely gifted at filling all the space. Like, there's no negative space in Billie Eilish songs historically. He's filling a lot, like the through line. She has such a sturdiness in her vocal presentation, but what they don't do is lighten the things around her to make the voice the center. You feel like she's arriving in the middle of a kind of like pre-existing full spectrum soundscape. And I think they've done an incredible job of turning something that could have been dense and like almost like suffocating, but she's so tuneful, like she's so gifted structurally that she's able to like rescue sounds like that. I'm surprised with how much air there is on this record.
Yeah.
That was the first thing I noticed. What came to mind for me, British soul music, like contemporary British soul music, like Jesse Ware, Mabel, like people along those lines.
Yep.
Because I feel like you're hearing the kind of curves in Billie's voice more on this album than on prior albums. But really, we'll talk about what this album is about, but like in terms of where it sits in her career, this is her John Mayer continuum.
Wow. Okay.
This is her John Mayer continuum. It's taking the everything that predates Continuum is like John Mayer in mode. And Continuum is like, no, I make tuneful pop. And like, yes, like maybe you showed up because I can do the guitar well, or maybe you showed up because you thought I was handsome, or maybe you showed up because you thought I was a great singer. Probably not. But like, you showed up for those reasons. But then that's where the pivot in the career comes, where he's like, actually, I do much more. I'm capable of more things. This, it breathed in a way that earlier John Mayer records didn't breathe. This album to me breathes. And I think the point that they're trying to communicate is that, like, you know, goth Billy, emo Billy, whatever, you know, dark wave Billy, like that stuff is not what's going to define Billie Eilish moving forward.
Well, I do think it's most interesting that, you know, we mentioned the Oscar songs, like, she has become a ballads artist, like the first album, you know, you have Bad Guy, you had the title track, you know, When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go? Spooky Sounds. Like it was very like
great tour.
Yeah. Amazing tour.
You went to the radio. You went to the radio spider.
No, I saw like the smaller.
Oh, you saw before
that. Yeah. But it was very much like, ooh, Billie is like, oh, she's Marilyn Manson or something. You know, like that was like the head fake. And then Happier Than Ever, the second album was, you know, quieter. And then the Barbie song and the other Oscar song, very quiet. And then this album, I feel like it is almost that, but then every song has a beat switch where there's like a something grander happening.
But does it feel lighter to you?
Yeah, it definitely feels lighter. I feel like they have like whatever synth presets they were on, you know, are like... Are like feathery, you know, like, you know, airy vibes, for sure. And I think you're right that there's some soul, like talking about specific tracks, like my favorite song on here, the one that's really stuck with me is like probably the least Billy song on here. And it really sounds to me like Claro type beat or like Sky Ferreira type beat.
Which one?
Or Wet. And that's Birds of a Feather.
Oh man. You said Wet.
Wet. You know, shout out to Wet. I'll disclose. Those are friends. Not to be confused with Big Wet or the Kanye Wet tank tops, which
honestly missed opportunity, candidly.
But Birds of a Feather has that like bouncy British soul thing. It's really like pretty pop. And to me, the reason I know it works is because I'm always so mad when really good writers use a cliche as the song title and the hook. But when I can get past it, I'm like, I know it's working. We should listen to a little Birds of a Feather. But to me, this is like, you know, this album, you can listen to it once and you're like, oh, it's pretty down tempo or whatever. And then the more I've listened to it, the more I've found like the hooks and the like secret pop moments that are hiding sometimes on the back half of some of these tracks or like this one throughout.
So this album, well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about the rollout of this album. Going back, talking about some of the press, Billy did a big Rolling Stone interview, very
sexually forward.
Yeah, very sexually frank, talking about coming into her sexuality. And that is very much the subject matter, certainly of the top half of this album.
Sure.
Very much the subject matter. And it does feel in the same way that there is when you read that story, you see that push and pull between like, I'm like tossing off all the conventions of what people had asked of me previously. But I also understand that this too is kind of a performance. Mm-hmm. It's both at the same time. That's how I feel about these songs at the top of the album where I'm like, wow, it's like incredibly sharp and astute and like, really good songwriting, but also, you know, like they're so self-conscious in a way.
Right.
And it takes me out of the moment slightly, but on a baseline level, I think it's really refreshing to hear her sing like this. I think it's refreshing to hear her talk like this. When you go back to the first two, forget the soundtrack songs. When you go back to the first two albums, there's like a cloistering of Billie Eilish's emotion. Mm-hmm. The emotion is implicit because of what Phineas is doing, but sometimes I'm not getting the full range of it. That's kind of, I think one of, as much as I like Billie Eilish music, there's always been a restraint in her vocal presentation that I think has kept me at a little bit of a distance from it. But I think on this go round, I feel much closer to the words. I feel much closer to the voice. I think in a literal sense, there's less, like Phineas is doing less. But I also, it's what happens when you grow up and become more comfortable and kind of like cut to the point.
It's interesting that you mentioned the sort of frankness around sexuality or feeling or whatever it is. Cause I do think like, I mean like Bad Guy is her breakthrough song and that's like quite explicit for a teenage artist. And I think it's interesting. Billy is interesting as a teen star growing up because she came in on her own, like she didn't come with Disney or Nickelodeon or, you know, having to make G rated or PG music. Like she was always a little bit edgy in everything, but she did come.
Fan of XXXTentacion.
Yeah. Famously. Yeah. But she did come with her family, which is the sort of like, which that's her baggage.
You spent some time.
I spent some time in their house.
Yeah.
I know they slept in a family bed together, you know, well into childhood, the four of them, very, very, very tight knit family, homeschooled. I remember her parents telling me, I'll never forget. They were like, we've never spent a night away from them. Like we never had a babysitter. Like they were always together. And the fact that she makes this music with her brother, You know, and I think you saw her sort of shaking some of that off in the documentary that came out a couple years ago.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about the documentary, which is like another product of kind of like, I'm showing you so much and it's completely controlled and regulated.
It's just interesting to think of Billy growing up in public, but always feeling a certain level of freedom. But you still realize, like, even the bad girl teen artist, like, when they come of age in the public eye, they really feel that. Like, the opening song here, Skinny, she's talking about wearing less of the Billie Eilish baggy clothes, you know, the look. And she's like, people say I look so happy because I'm skinny, but, you know, the old me is the real me.
Wearing less and going out.
Yeah, wearing less and going out more. And then she gets to Lunch, which is the second track and the first single, which has a music video that came out over the weekend. And that's the one where she's talking about same-sex attraction, same-sex lust, basically, and really, really going for it. And that was sort of that came hand in hand with the racy quotes from the Rolling Stone profile.
Hearing you talk about Bad Guy, which, yes, as subject matter, obviously felt very both learned and raw for someone at that age. But Bad Guy, as with a lot of Billy songs, like, every time I hear Bad Guy, I kind of imagine like a lounge singer doing like,
Bad
Guy. You know, like you sort of, you kind of imagine it that way.
Yeah. You kind of imagine it that way.
And a lot of y'all could benefit from imagining it that way. But that's always kept, like I said, it's kept a little bit of a barrier between me and the subject matter. Whereas I do not experience anything like that, even though plenty of the songs here are incredibly tuneful. But they don't feel like standards. Mm-hmm. Like Lunch does not feel like a standard. Like Lunch is a catchy, damp statement of purpose about waking up and not waking up and wanting to never wake up from this fever dream of a new reality. And so to me, this feels like a positive, successful iteration that both acknowledges what Billie has been good at, but also makes a space for her to do a new thing without being mired in this old idea.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit about the rollout. The other thing she did, you know, the day before this album came out was she did a listening party.
Kanye stands mad.
Yeah. And she did basically a full scale arena concert, in Brooklyn at Barclays.
Yep. Walking around the floor.
Walking around listening to her own music. It wasn't Phineas just
filming her.
You know, the fog machine, all of that. Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, I feel like they played very well with scale on this. It's like, it's a small, tight album. It came out relatively quietly, but then here's a big arena show where we can make it a thing. You know, the other thing they did over the weekend was they released a vocals only version of it. Which they've said they wanted to do forever, which is like, you know, it's very Radiohead. It's very Nine Inch Nails. It's like, you know, remix us, whatever. There was a little murmurs of a pop star Cold War behind the scenes.
Okay. So as we said, it's been a very busy 6 to 8 weeks. Taylor, Tortured Poets Department remains at the top of the album chart. And seemingly she wants to remain there from what I can tell.
Yes. On the day of Billie Eilish's release, Taylor Swift put out some more digital deluxe.
You come to me versions. On the day of the release of Hit Me Hard and Soft with three vocal notes.
Yeah. Releasing some voice memos that could juice her streaming numbers again and have her, I don't know, compete for another number one. Some people, including made it all the way to TMZ, which I thought was interesting, took this as a shot at Billie for Billie maybe taking a swipe at Taylor's vinyl production. You know, being like all these artists damaging the environment by creating the same versions of their albums for their fans to buy over and over again.
Dua Lipa.
You think Dua Lipa is making a dent in the ozone layer?
I just want to issue a challenge to podcast listeners. If you own the 11 different versions of Radical Optimism, send a photo to us. And like, we're going to reverse image search. So like, don't steal one off the Dua Lipa subreddit. Okay. Dua Lipa Brazil Twitter account. Right. Like, don't do that. I'd like to see a photo. Like, you know, put like the day's newspaper, like a hostage photo or something.
If you can find a newspaper. Yeah.
Please find a newspaper. I'd like to see.
Popcast@NYTimes.com.
Yeah, please. Popcast@NYTimes.com. I'd love to see it.
We're coming back for you, Dua. But yeah, so then, and then Billy comes back with the vocals only. You know, I don't know. Is this like, is this manufactured? Is this, but it is good meta narrative. We talk about what pop stars need for their albums to succeed. Mm-hmm. Look, Billy's going to do numbers. She always does. Mm-hmm. You know, Happier Than Ever, I would say maybe like, didn't stick around like you would have expected for the second Billie Eilish mm-hmm. album. This one, it's only 10 songs. I do think there's a couple sneaky hits in here.
Yeah.
Songs that will be around for a while. Not to bring everything back to Taylor Swift, but there, you did notice there's a song called Love of My Life on here, but it's in French.
Sure is.
I know you as a LOML fan.
Yes.
From Tortured Poets.
I thought you were saying someone who's fluent in French.
Yeah, and also someone who's fluent in... do you consider yourself fluent?
Bien sûr que oui.
Okay. Accent needs work. Even I know that.
I sound like Dua in the back of the cab.
Yeah. But this is...
Dua, we're coming. Je voudrais aller à l'hôtel, monsieur.
But this is one of the songs with the big beat switch, and it has like... has like an indie sleaze back half.
Oh yeah,
for lack of a better term.
Yeah, yeah. The back half of this is pretty fascinating.
I couldn't place it. I was like, this is one of the things where I'm like, this is like a reference to something that I know in my bones, but I can't. I couldn't.
And you didn't land on it.
No. Did you?
No.
Do you?
No. I agree. It's familiar, but nothing specific.
Yeah.
But
it sounds vibe. Like it could, yeah. It's like it's club. It's a little clubby.
Yeah. It's '04 maybe.
Yeah, that's a 04? Yeah. American Apparel was calling out to me. When I heard this, obviously Billy was like not yet born.
Not yet born. No.
But or was an infant. Any other songs in here that really spoke to you about either where Billy is now or where she and Phineas?
I mean, I really do think the first half of this album is better than the second half mm-hmm. of this album. Is it Birds of a Feather?
That's the one that I was talking about. Yeah, like the sort of soul, a little white R&B vibe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think when I was listening to that, it's maybe the first time in many years of listening to Billie Eilish where I was like, huh, you did a thing with your voice. You know, it's like a thing with your voice that I have not heard you do before.
Yeah, she sounds different.
Yeah, and but not... different but not troubled, mm-hmm. different but not aspiring to something like this.
Comfortable.
Yeah, this has always been like under the clothing. Like there's always been this. And I wonder, do you think, like, okay, if you were to strip out the vocals, which they have, and I haven't listened to the stripped out vocals, do you think that these songs vocally are structured less rigorously than prior Billie Eilish songs?
Like on a song structure, like verse, chorus, verse level?
Yeah.
Maybe because every song is two songs, you know, like I think there's a lot of hooks on here and some standard verses, but I think there are a lot of like suites, you know, there's a song called Bittersweet on here that I think, also has that going for it. But I think there's lots of pieces. And I do think I think she and Phineas think a little bit as collage artists and producers.
Historically or
yeah,
on this specifically?
I think historically. Well, and maybe this is just where it's really where they're really nailing it and it's coming into focus. But I do think because they're bedroom artists. You know what I mean? Like it both literally and figuratively, I think they're working on these songs next to each other for such long periods of time. They're pulling stuff from here and there, you know, they're sampling weird things from their life. Or, you know, I did like the joke where the very last thing you hear on the album is Billy saying, so when can I hear the next one? Which is like, I think they have, there's a lot of textures that they're playing with and a lot of inside jokes, between them. And I do think like, they're pulling pieces from different sessions and whatever. And I feel like, yeah, that's pretty well realized on this album.
What do you think that this album says about the kind of pop star that Billie Eilish intends to become? Because I think prior to this album, what I would have said is, frankly, something of a stubborn pop star committed to a, not an unpopular style, but maybe not a bright style. Maybe not a reach out and give you a hug, well, smile at you kind of style.
Definitely not that.
Maybe more like a console you when you're sad kind of style. But she and Phineas felt really committed to it. This is the first moment where I'm like, is she, again, not conventional, but like, is there, forgive me, an Adele album in her future, Adele style, you know, like, is she going to go in a breathier, heavier, but not claustrophobic direction? Does she want to make songs that are more frank in terms of, like, obviously there's a lot of sexual crankness on this album, but does she want to do things where the lyrics themselves are a little bit tighter, a little bit punchier, a little bit, I want to communicate a mood? But is she doing something that's like, I want to be chit-chatty and have smaller phrases and kind of conversational in a way? Like, Billie's never felt conversational to me before.
I think she's always had some version of that. I still see this as a quite stubborn album. I still think they feel like, we're going to do only what we want to do. We're going to live in our own little world, at least until we don't, as the duo. And yeah, it's not really in conversation with whatever else. Like, there's no Post Malone feature on here. You know what I mean? There's no like acoustic guitar. There's no, you know, like, I still think Billie is going to be auteurist, like, in a very specific way that I think a lot of other pop stars at the moment want to be seen that way, but are not actually. And I think she's on her own path. But I think people will have to come to her. As far as, like, I guess I don't think her previous stuff, this only feels a shade different. Like, I think if you're listening to this not that closely, it's, oh, of course this is a Billie Eilish album. Like, I do think she's had conversational lyrics. I do think, like, she's always been a pretty good, economical, not that mystical of a writer. You know, I think, like, I think she's, like, you know, she's really... She's internet-y, and I mean that, like, as a compliment. Like, I think that she conveys like an intimacy that speaks to, you know, people her age. I do wonder if she's like, I wonder if her fans are aging with her, or if young people are continuing to discover her, because I do feel like she's not really the cool new thing. Like, I don't think she has the Olivia Rodrigo fans necessarily, but I don't think she wants them.
No, although I will say, you know, and I wonder what your experience of going to Billie shows has been. I was expecting, and this is, of course, a few years ago at this point, but like when I went to the Radio City show, I remember walking in and thinking, like, it's going to be like all the edgiest teenage girls in New York. And it wasn't that.
It was just all the teenage girls in the tri-state area.
Yeah. And so I do think maybe there is more overlap in the Billie and Olivia fan bases than maybe you would see.
But I think now they have less to grab onto. I think she's like weird enough. She's quiet enough. She only pops out really when she wants. Like, I think she's on her own planet, and I think that's where she belongs and where she wants to be. I don't think she's at the center of anything.
Okay, but how have we gotten this far into the conversation without saying the word Lord?
Yeah, I think she's on the Lord path.
Right. But like, here's the thing. The Lord path is, I think Lord, I mean, you know, Melodrama is, I think, going to be the album that stands in for like pop star Refusenik.
Sure.
Turns for the next 10 to 20 years. I fundamentally believe that the music that Lord wants to make is eccentric, angular. I don't want to go so far as to say avant-garde in any way, but certainly Lord, I think, wants to make music that, doesn't go down as easily as Royals.
Yeah.
I think that would be Lord's preference. I don't think that's what Billie Eilish wants.
I don't either.
I think Billie Eilish wants to make music that goes down very easily. I think she wants to find another approach to to doing that, which is why I actually don't like when I first was feeling like, oh, this record's so different. The first thing that popped to mind was Lorde. And I was like, no, she's not doing that because she's not extending a middle finger to the universe.
But I have a reason for that. And okay. I've talked to both of them about this, actually, which is that Lorde had a song that was bigger than she was ever going to be.
Yeah.
Royals, one of the biggest songs of the modern era.
Yeah.
It was bigger than her as an artist, and it came first. It was the first thing people heard.
Yeah.
Billie, they made very clear, probably with Lorde on the bulletin board, it was her career was built very deliberately to never have a song be bigger than her.
Yeah.
And that's why she was able to get this critical mass through releasing the EPs, never sending a song to radio. Like, they didn't push Ocean Eyes. Like, if they wanted Ocean Eyes, the first SoundCloud hit, to be Royals, it probably could have happened, but they hit the brakes and they let her create a visual identity, a sonic identity, and they went very slowly. And I think that's why she'll never feel the need to do what Lorde did, because Lorde knew, and you know, same thing when I talked to Lorde around Solar Power, she was like, I didn't even have to worry about trying to make another Royals because it's impossible. Like, it was such a lightning in a bottle moment. And I think that set them on different paths, and Billie can always be popular as Billie no matter what music she makes, whereas Lorde actually did have to shake something off and say, you'll never get this from me again, which is why on Solar Power there's literally one 808 sound, and it's only when she's referencing her old music.
Yeah, sure. Should we go out with something from Melodrama?
Yeah, why not?
Writer in the Dark.
Oh, okay.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
I gave my brother a New York Times subscription.
She sent me a year-long subscription, so I have access to all the games. We'll do Wordle, Mini, Spelling Bee.
It has given us a personal connection.
We exchange articles, and so having read the same article, we can discuss it.
The coverage, the options, not just news.
Such a diversified gift.
I was really excited to give him a New York Times cooking subscription so that we could share recipes. And we even just shared a recipe the other day.
The New York Times contributes to our quality time together.
You have all of that information at your fingertips.
It enriches our relationship, broadening our horizons.
It was such a cool and thoughtful gift.
We're reading the same stuff. We're making the same food. We're on the same page.
Connect even more with someone you care about.
Learn more about giving a New York Times subscription as a gift
at nytimes.com/gift.
Welcome back to Popcast Deluxe. I'm John.
I'm Joe.
We're going to go into songs of the week, which are not Dua Lipa songs.
Not
incredibly.
Yet.
Not yet.
She could learn a thing or two from Tinashe.
I honestly think why is it that every week we cover somebody and think, if only Dua Lipa did this? It's like, I don't, it's verging on unfair.
Yeah.
But I do think this has come up at least twice, maybe three times now. And I imagine might continue to come up for the rest of the summer. Okay. I thought last week was like a little bit of a dud when it came to new songs.
Yeah.
Outside of the Billie record.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back in time a couple of weeks. And I found a song that TikTok and the meme world has just.
This is almost, it feels almost old fashioned.
Yes,
how this Tinashe song is picking up.
I agree. So it's called Nasty. You want to play just a touch of it?
Yeah, just play a little Nasty.
Just like that.
all know Tinashe.
Mm-hmm.
Tinashe has had, I want to say, maybe three peaks, but no extreme peaks over the last 10 years.
Maybe or so. Some valleys.
Definitely some valleys, but there's been something stubborn and persistent about Tinashe.
I asked you before we started recording, how many albums does Tinashe have?
And I said, no more than two.
and the answer is three on RCA and three after that.
Sorry.
I apologize. Leading up to the release of the second part of her previous album, Baby Angel. This is going to be Baby Angel Part 2, Quantum Baby. And Nasty
Janelle Monáe type beat.
Yeah, but Nasty is working. Nasty came out like weeks ago at this point.
Yeah,
but
it's more than a month.
This weekend, because of, I'm like frazzled just thinking about like, did they make this happen? Like, is this fake? It's such kismet, you know?
It is. Well,
there's text-based memes, there's video-based memes. Yes. Take us back though.
Okay.
To Nate. Nate Vibes.
Oh, Nate DeWine.
Nate DeWiner.
Unbelievable. Okay, so the breakout moment for this Tinashe Nasty TikTok snippet is a clip of a white gentleman and a black woman dancing, you know, doing sort of like Caribbean, whining on each other, Caribbean dance, and, you know, as if prepping for carnival, and it's to the hook of Tinashe's Nasty. That is the video.
That's the edited video.
No, I'm saying, but like, that's the one that went viral.
But it went viral, I think, on Twitter. Like, someone took the original TikTok.
Oh, and put
Tinashe on it on Twitter.
Oh, I thought they put Tinashe on it on TikTok, and then that TikTok was brought to Twitter.
I think the original TikTok is him dancing to Bind.
No. I know the original. Yes, because the original. So this gentleman.
Yeah.
This gentleman has a full account.
Yeah.
You know, dozens of videos. Yeah. He seems to be part of maybe a dance troupe. Everybody finds him amusing. He finds himself amusing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, obviously, he's doing like a overly theatrical, like maybe lightly comedic version of like, look at me. I'm a little bit of an awkward guy.
And you saw
guy.
The memes and they're like, Steve when Miranda leaves the house. Jack Antonoff when Margaret Qualley leaves the house and it's him doing his dance. Just a great form. I just, this particular meme ecosystem has so many branches right now.
I was not fully tapped in with the text-based memes. So anyway, so that video went really viral.
I think it was brought to Twitter by a user called Javi at Gruesome with two S's. And he just said, good morning. And he put Nasty over...
Okay, knowyourmeme.com.
That's why I did my research. Okay. That's why we're here.
Okay. And then eventually, I think, but we don't know and if then, it's Astro, but we don't know if it's AstroTurf.
No, we do not know if a label is paying for this, but it's too good. As we've said before, like if they could do this, they would do it all the time.
That's true. So I guess what we want to say is if you as the label did pay for this, congratulations. You did great.
As always.
Yeah. And then at one point, Tinashe herself dances like with this video in the background,
right,
mimicking the moves. Real full circle. Then you were pointing out there's text memes.
Yeah. So then the lyric in this song, like, is somebody going to match my freak or whatever? Or you're like, who's going to match my freak? Then people started tweeting about it. Someone called it.
Wasn't that a line in the Kendrick song? Too?
No. Someone said it was the existential question of our time. Someone to continue the Sex and the City thread, which I'm going to bring all the way home by the end of this.
Can't wait.
Someone said, I couldn't help but wonder, is somebody going to match my freak? And then dovetailing beautifully with the moment in Challengers, where everybody is interested in
matching each other's freak
and love triangles.
Yeah.
Someone said, as a text prompt, who are two people who actually match each other's freak? Mm-hmm. And then everybody started responding with images. You know, there's a good one that's like Matthew Lillard and your boy from Scream. You know, they match each other's freak. Phantom Thread, obviously, they match each other's freak. Mm-hmm. One of my personal favorites, Smith Jarrett and Samantha from Sex and the City. I mean, like the ultimate,
truly the accuracy
matching each other's freak. You know, and this has been going all weekend, and
it's like soon to be in a wedding vow near you.
Yeah,
I knew it when you matched my freak. I knew we would be together forever.
And these are like these are memes that I saw existing parallel. And I, it took me a second to realize that the glue between them is Nasty by Tinashe, who has been searching for a breakthrough hit basically since OB O'Brien and Drake jumped on Two On a decade ago.
So, Two On, genuinely one of the great pop songs of the 2010s. Irresistible, quick paced, slick.
Damn, DJ Mustard.
Early Mustard.
With red wine. I mean,
talking about
all producer all stars.
DJ Mustard and Tinashe. Who's going to match?
Yeah. DJ Mustard, red wine production. Too on.
Yeah, seriously. Talk about those insane words you don't hear a lot in the same sentence.
And Nasty.
You don't hear so much about them anymore. Yeah,
and Nasty, we realize, produced by Ricky Reed.
Quick sidebar. Why doesn't Ricky Reed get more acclaim? Like, why is he not spoken about in the same reverence as it's like, I feel like he does A level work
with Lizzo, for instance.
Yeah. But like, is getting like B plus acclaim.
Right. Like nobody's fighting about him like they are about Jack.
Yeah. And Ricky Reed, I think, has an incredible pop ear. Smart songwriter. Also, what was the Ricky Reed solo project called? There was like a side album.
You tell me.
That was, I don't know. It was like, it was low key hitting, whatever it was. I remember that being good. But why are people not agitated about Ricky Reed in a more serious way?
I think he has his favorites and he really commits to them and they don't always work, which is why the Tinashe thing working is so beautiful, because like Ricky Reed is also working, like has a great single with Deja Loaf, you know, like somebody else who like, the industry didn't quite, and the fans, like, fans didn't quite let her go, but they couldn't get her over the line. You know, it's just like.
But also, Deja Loaf is like 2 years too early.
Yeah.
Like, imagine Deja Loaf today.
I'm saying.
Imagine the Deja Loaf, Sexy Red, Lola Brooke album altogether.
And I think, like, Ricky Reed, he commits to working with artists that he really believes in, even when they're not hitting, which is why I do think. So it's just a feel good moment. If Nasty becomes like an actual
feels
top
like,
40 summer song,
feels like it's heading in that direction.
Yeah, why not?
And also, I mean, you mentioned Drake on Two On the remix, OB O'Brien,
a SoundCloud song.
You know, a time when Drake was hopping on a lot of different things, rap songs, R&B songs.
Oh, wow. Are you going where I think you're going?
No, I'm not going
anywhere. Then he should hop on Nasty to wipe the stench.
I mean, it's not the worst idea. It did cross my mind. I wasn't going to say it, but it's not the worst idea. Can you think of? But to me, there's not a lot of air between Two On and Nasty.
Sure, yeah.
But it's striking.
She came full circle.
Yes, but it's striking how in 2014 or 13 or whatever, Two On felt like of the moment and futuristic, and today Nasty feels of the moment but also futuristic. It feels like somehow the cycle, we're stuck in a cycle somewhere.
Okay. I see it a little bit as I feel like it's a throwback.
You think it's a throwback?
I think it's a little bit like people who are my age are like, remember when we were in our 20s?
No, but when I hear this song, there's something more. The thing that Two On had that Nasty doesn't have is Two On is like it's a much more like bulbous and thick. There's like a tiny bit of viscosity in
DJ Mustard.
Yes, but like Nasty is like spared.
Right.
Feels a little bit more. You hear the component parts separately, and there's something in that brokenness that feels a tiny bit futuristic to me.
Oh well, but maybe also throwback. Like, don't you think there's some Janet reference?
Of course.
Of course. That's always in the DNA here. And Janet Jackson, of course, one of the great artists who always sounds both timeless and futuristic.
Yes. And obviously, like, if you're going to put Tinashe in a legacy, like, you absolutely put Tinashe in the legacy of, like, Janet Jackson circa, like, 1990 to 1993 or 1989 to 92 or whatever. But this is, candidly, I heard the hook of this song.
You'd heard the TikTok snippet.
Yeah, yeah. Like 500 times yeah. before I press play on the actual song. And maybe that's actually what charts really should be tabulating, is how many times you hear a snippet before you press play on a real song. Okay. That's actually.
What's a good ratio? That sounds like a bad ratio.
That is a bad. Well, I'm stubborn. Yeah. Also, I'm stuck on TikTok. Right. But I do wonder. I wonder if there's a conversion. I wonder if anybody's running the stats on this conversion.
Sure.
But the song itself is also pretty good.
Yep. Would not be mad to hear it 500 more times.
And I'm certain you will all summer long.
You got a song of your own that you want to recommend?
I do.
Not of your own in that you wrote
it. I made a song. Yeah. I made a song. Okay. Speaking of virality. All right, so I can't remember exactly how long ago this was, but this is maybe like February?
It's a long time.
A long time ago. I lived a lot of lives since February.
I do not remember February.
Yeah. Maybe it's February. Maybe it's March. A vertical video of a rapper spitting like incredibly hard goes viral. Not in and of itself that interesting or unusual, except... the beat sounds like it's basically the Lean Back beat.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a replay of the Lean Back beat. It's in the family of Lean Back.
Lean Back type beat.
Yes, definitely. And the rapper is in India rapping in Punjabi. And rapping in like a very distinctly what I believe to be New York or New York adjacent cadence.
You would.
I would. I would. And so obviously I saw this, and you see any number of things on Twitter where people are like, I can't believe blank in blank country is blanking this way.
Yeah.
You see that all
Italian
the time.
Drill.
Great.
Yeah.
My memoir title. So there was that first wave of like, and all the sort of rap accounts were kind of like, oh, this, and a lot of like old head guys, like, you know, like maybe rap writers of my generation or generation right below me who are very New York centric. We're like, you know, we're globalizing the world. Now, look, I'm completely confident that there are probably like 1,000 rappers in India that literally make like Young Thug sound like Rock Marciano.
Sure.
You know, like, I'm sure there are flows happening
that we haven't even thought of.
Yeah. There's absolute bonkers flows happening that I wish I was like more tuned in with. There's actually, I came across, man, what was this? It was a video of Sidhu Mooswala and Mazi.
Wow.
And Mazi, like, obviously, like, a really good rapper.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not the most eccentric flow guy, but, like, interesting. And then you hear the Sidhu Mooswala stuff, and it's like everybody in the room is kind of like... So, like... Those flows are possible.
Sure.
This guy, whose name
he's not doing that.
He's not doing that. His name is The Ranger.
He's in the pocket.
He is the pocket. He is literally the pocket. He's wearing like a puffer. You know, he's wearing like not a North Face, but it's like he's wearing like a puffer coat. And he's very much like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously incredibly legible, I think, certainly to an American rap audience and certainly like an older New York type rap audience. He got signed. Also, I did a little digging on like what was happening in the cipher. Yeah. Like, and like what the scene is. And there's like other videos of other rappers who have like, I think slightly more unusual flows, but his is the video that really went somewhere. And so he got signed to Mass Appeal, Mass Appeal's Indian division, I guess.
Wow.
And they cooked up a new beat. And it's, I think it's basically the same song. And it's not as viral as the original song, but it's an interesting case study in how hip hop gets globalized and ways that people become popular and maybe can build careers in unexpected ways. So this song is called Mukbala and it's by The Ranger. What has the internet been showing you this past week?
Okay, so I have sort of the opposite of what you have, which is I have no backstory.
No backstory.
I have no backstory.
Sometimes, you're just here for the art?
Yeah.
No narrative?
But still a tale about discovery. And like you said, what is the internet showing you? You know, I'm a big fan of my For You feed.
I do.
On x.com.
Yeah.
It's well curated by Big Elon and whatever algorithm he's been cooking
up. Cybertruck E.
Yeah. Sometimes people post a music video. They're like, it's the best thing I ever heard.
Of course that happened.
Whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How many times do you click that? One out of every 12?
Yeah, maybe one.
I don't know. That's an estimate. More so depending on the account. This one came from at Mr. Blueface. Shout out to you. Not the Blueface.
Oh, okay.
Blue.
Who's in jail?
Okay. Blue, B-L-E-U, Blueface.
Do we know? Who is that?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought that
seems to be someone in the rap blogosphere.
Okay. An aficionado.
He said, this is my Frank Ocean.
Whoa.
Was a,
I'm going to tell my kids this was Frank Ocean.
Like, yeah. Like this was, it was like a still of a, a grill and like a, looks like film camera, a little fuzzy, a little.
Great.
Whatever. I clicked on it.
Gunner style type.
I clicked on it. It's good. I watched the music video. It's called Beltway by a kid called Opal OD.
Great.
It's from Prince George's County, Maryland.
Okay.
And he made a really artful song and music video that is, sure, indebted to Frank Ocean. It's a little rap. It's a little R&B.
Your favorite artist.
Yeah. And look, if only Frank Ocean would use drums. And it is funny I clicked on it. You know why? Because it was phrased in just a way that it was like, this is better than Frank Ocean. And I was like, I like things that are influenced by Frank Ocean. We played, McGee on the show a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I like Dijon. I like people who sound like Frank Ocean, but make songs and put out music.
Okay. We're going to actually, in the next segment, we're actually going to talk a little bit about that.
Okay. So this song's called Beltway. It's a good music video.
It's recent.
Yeah. It came out a couple weeks ago. Has very few plays.
Great.
I don't know. Again, everything is astroturf. Maybe he paid Mr. Blueface to tweet about how his song sounded like Frank Ocean, but better. And it worked on me, and here it is. I'm going to listen to it more. This is Beltway by Opal OD.
Welcome back to Podcast Deluxe. I am John.
I'm Joe.
It is snack chat time. I have some things I want to talk about from last week. And to do that, we're going to do one of these snacks.
Yeah.
And then maybe we're going to do the other of these snacks.
We had a choice.
And then
between two foreign
Sawyer,
chips.
Our senior producer, very astutely said, Surf and Turf?
Yes.
Here we are with Surf and Turf Snack Chat. What do we got?
All right. We got Chinese bugles.
What flavor?
You love bugles.
I do love bugles. I love, to me, caramel bugles.
Right. That's crazy.
What is crazy about
it? That's supposed to be a savory snack, but a sweet version of it. And it's crazy. It's nuts. Caramel bugles is like
caramel bugle. The crack on the caramel bugle when you like the shatter of it, so satisfying.
It's a really sweet, weird.
I mean, style. Caramel bugles. Here's how good caramel bugles are: I have been physically ill numerous times
because
overeating caramel bugles because they are so good. That's how good caramel bugles are. Anyhow, I do like bugles in general.
These are, the translation is barbecue, but the image is a star-shaped steak.
What happened if we had a starfish but made it steak?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. It's a very well seasoned.
That's what it says?
No, I see it with my eyes. Oh,
you see the seasoning, like the ranch last week.
Yeah. No, not the bugle, but the photo of the star-shaped steak looks very well seasoned.
Okay, great.
And then we have Thai, what look to be scallop-flavored Lays. Surf.
Ridged. Surf. Those are ridged.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Limited edition.
Extra scallop.
Extra scallop. Scallop with white cream sauce. So,
yeah,
all right.
Look, I'm an enthusiast. I love a good scallop. I don't.
You love scallop.
I do. Like a really, really hearty all right, meaty so scallop.
Your death row meal is
caramel bugles and scallop bugles.
when you're on death row for loving caramel bugles too much. That will be your final meal.
When I'm on death row for never admitting that ranch is good.
Yeah, that's
that when I'm kicked out.
It's true. That is a crime against America.
Like are they gonna stop me at like some like airport outside of New York or Los Angeles and be like, before we can let you into the city, we gotta see if you like
ranch. This ranch is good. Yeah. All right, you're starting with the scallops, and I'm starting with the barbecue. Not much of a barbecue scent.
There's definitely a scent here. You know what I did last week?
What'd you do?
Went to shows.
Oh, you went to a concert.
Went to concerts.
Multiple concerts.
I did a doubleheader on one night. Shaboozy and McGee.
Mm-hmm. Two Song of the Week
graduates.
Graduates from podcasts. Yeah.
It was supposed to go on separate nights, but I had a migraine. Thank you for asking me if I was permanently enfeebled last week. Did have a rough week health-wise.
How was Shaboozy?
Tough room.
Did Tipsy go off?
Had to leave before Tipsy.
Oh, okay. So you didn't see what you came for?
No, but that show, so I asked. The concert was booked before Cowboy Carter, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
But was it sold out before Cowboy Carter? It
was not sold out because I talked to a podcast fan who came to say hi. And I said, oh, you're at a Shaboozy. Like, how are you at a Shaboozy show? And he said to me, shout out to you, by the way. He said to me that after Cowboy Carter, he was interested. His interest was piqued, saw that there was a show and purchased a ticket. So this was working. This was at Baby's All Right, which is, 300 people in that room?
Sure.
Call it 400 on a good day?
Sounds like a lot. But
yeah. No. So 300 people. Very, very, very packed. They had all the doors open. Usually there's a door closed between the bar section and the venue part. All the doors were open.
Bugles are good, by the way. I don't know if they taste like anything, but they're good. We'll trade.
Yeah. How was Shaboozy? Shaboozy was, there were a number of people there who were clearly just there for Tipsy.
Mm-hmm.
And like maybe didn't quite know what to do with his earlier stuff, which is not all country-ish. You know, he did songs that were rap songs. They did songs that felt like country songs. It was a little awkward. It was a tough room. You know how that room is. It's like your head is like almost at the ceiling. Crowd was like half there. But also I did have to leave early. I did have to leave because I had to get to McGee.
Right.
And I want to say when you had McGee as your song of the week, I was like, this is cool. Like I'm into this. Like, and to be honest, I never totally understood the Dijon thing. Never totally clicked for me. I tried. I feel like it was like one of those things and. Was that last year or the year before? Like 2 years ago, right?
A couple of years.
I feel like it was one of those things where everybody was like, why are you not on this? And I'm just like, just never totally hit for me.
Wow, these scallop chips are very seafoody.
Like I was going to say, they're so condiment heavy. I feel like I taste the sauce.
You taste the white cream sauce.
Yeah, whatever that. I taste that more than you taste the seafood more?
I taste the sea. Yeah, which I never feel with seafood flavor junk food. Shrimp chips maybe, but this is like it's like a mouthful of the ocean. It's a lot. I couldn't eat a whole bag of these. I need a toothbrush.
Yeah.
These have too much flavor, and the Bugles
these
have
not enough.
Not enough.
Yeah, the Bugles. Okay. So into this, to the McGee Show. First of all, obviously, you can make some jokes. Tamer and Bala,
yeah.
For example.
Mm-hmm. Continuum era John Mayer.
I'm going to stand on that. That's truly business I'm standing on. I was talking, I saw a friend of the show, Chris, who actually designed the Popcast logo.
Mm-hmm.
He was there. Shout out Chris, Jeanette, Ava, everybody was there. And he was like, it's Phil Collins to these kids. Like, these kids have never heard Phil Collins, but like, they think that's what this is to them. I was just like, it's like your man's Tame Impala cover band. It's like, that was the preliminary energy. This guy ripped.
This is what they say.
Absolutely ripped. He ripped. Whoever was on, like, I mean, there was no like drum kit, but like whoever's on like
percussion,
bleeps and bloops.
Yeah.
Ripped. Only three people on stage, I think. I was incredibly impressed with how they played with dynamic. They had a really casual offhand way of filling the space. And he obviously is not a public kind of figure.
Yeah. But people like the Enigma.
Yeah. Like, he's being lit from behind. So like the beam of light is coming out to the crowd from behind his head.
It's a lot of hair.
I was very.
Man, the scallop is like, I can't believe how scallopy these are.
It's really funny because I really taste the cream, but I don't taste the scallop that much.
I hit my sodium.
Try to switch back?
Yeah. Get one of the dark ones. Get one of the heavy, get one of the heavily sauced ones. Yeah, he's a star, right? He's a star.
It was the music of a star. It's not clear if he wishes to be a star. But, like, it was definitely the music of a star. Kind of like a... Okay. This one, whatever one I just had?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was fresh out of the scallop counter at Whole Foods.
That's where you get your scallops. You need a seafood guy.
Lay's Thailand? They have a seafood guy.
It's limited edition because there are only so many scallops.
They're harvesting all the scallops for this. Anyway, McGee, absolutely ripped. Guitar tone. You know I don't get excited about guitar.
I've never heard you say the words guitar tone.
But like... pugnacious, attitudinal, serrated, like angry in times, like angry at moments, and sort of
the guitar playing.
Yeah, the guitar playing, and like kind of like curiously ambitious. Like there's some clear 80s like arena rock referencing in the back, but also kind of like sleazy at the same. It's like somehow like both like Velvet Underground and Guns N' Roses.
Wow.
Like somehow both of those things get touched on. Anyway, really impressive. Great night. Was glad I was able to catch it.
We'll never mispronounce McGee again.
I actually thought about this and I forgot to do it, but I was going to play the voice note where you were getting corrected on your pronunciation of McGee. I'm sorry. Sorry, Bradley.
Yeah.
What about you? Did you do anything this week?
No, I'm going to go to a concert again eventually.
No, you didn't do anything. Nothing you want to talk about.
I have a child.
You don't want to talk about the Knicks.
I don't want to talk about the Knicks. That was very depressing for everyone involved. I'm so glad. Like, it's on nights like last night where I'm glad I'm not a Knicks fan.
Okay, I guess I want to say my 2 weeks of Knicks fandom.
Yeah. Welcome to the team.
Yeah. Really? I tapped out so heavy.
You're just like, I'll never watch this again.
That's honestly how I felt. It was really draining.
Yeah.
All right, what are we on the scallop chips? Also, these scallops do look very seasoned as well. Right,
just like the steak, which the steak was under-seasoned, ultimately. I'm going 4 on the Bugles.
What are you going on this?
I respect it so much that the scallop lays are a 7 out of 10. Like, I don't want to eat anymore. My stomach hurts a little bit. I'm impressed. It nailed the flavor. It's like, you're reviewing an album, you're like meeting it on its own terms. It's not what I wish it was.
You honor its commitment to being what it is.
Attitudinal, serrated, like those Lays.
The official chip of the McGee tour?
Those Lays are kicking. 7 out of 10.
Okay. And the bugles?
Four.
Okay.
Boring. Like basically plain bugles.
I agree. Not much more interesting than the regular bugles, but I'm not offended by them in any way. No. I'd give that a 5.5 for the barbecue steak bugles. I mean, the scallop lays is tough because, like, you look at it through one framework, yeah, it's like an 8.5.
Yeah.
And then you look at it the other way, it's a 2.
Yeah.
It's like,
but that to me, that's what I want out of, yeah, out of a snack.
It's like, okay, I'm going to go
split the difference.
No. We're going to open up a new framework. It's an unviable 8. Okay. It's an 8 you should never engage. It's a don't eat this chip.
Yeah.
This chip will complicate your life.
Yeah.
But like on raw levels.
Definitely some raw in there. Yeah.
It's an 8. So congratulations to Lay's of Thailand.
Yeah.
Incredible. That is our show. Every podcast ever is at nytimes.com/podcast, right here on YouTube every week. We are here at youtube.com/podcast. We're going to go out with McGee.
Yeah. Not McG.
Maybe he's going to come around. You never know. But let's go out with a particular ripper.
Yeah.
It's Candy.